So my presentation is entitled Challenging Structural Foundations, How to Well Do Business, Buildings, Health Systems, Public Health Pearls of Wisdom Hold Up Against Hurricanes, Other Disasters, I've no disclosures. Just in case everyone isn't familiar, this is New York City, and it's a diversity inclusive kind of map that was created. Right here is, where is it? Right here is Manhattan. This is Brooklyn. This is Queens. And all of this is Nassau County, which is one of the counties that we're focused on, as well as Westchester County. So New York City, you know, songs, all these things are written about it, movies, everything. New York City metro area, though, includes other surrounding counties, including Long Island. And this is Nassau, and this is Suffolk. I'm from Virginia, just so I'm telling you this, because I didn't know that there were five boroughs before I came in and lived there. And I was like, oh, great. So this is FYI, in case anyone's not familiar. There is a lot of regional interdependency in the New York City area. In Nassau specifically, 50% of the population works in New York City. So they travel every single day through the extensive regional network. Some fast facts about Nassau. It's about 1.35 million people, in contrast to New York City's 8 million people. 500,000 residents live in the slosh zone. And the fascinating thing about New York State is we have a home rule state philosophy on how public health is practiced, which means that even though there's one county in Nassau specifically, there are two cities, three townships, and about 40-some different other jurisdictions, each of which have primary authority and auspices over what the rules are and what organizational leadership says in the smaller district has to kind of work within the larger one to make a difference. So kind of knowing our neighbors and knowing, and so you understand, Ted, on How I Met Your Mother, there's an episode about Nassau, Long Island, I see Long Island, yeah. And Great Gatsby, this is the big castle, if you ever get to go visit. I've never been to this castle, but that's all Long Island, so fun facts, and Nassau specifically. So we actually have had the pleasure of working as a center with Nassau County's Department of Health for the last more than a decade. We have a strong academic partnership with them and on a local health department level. We've done a number of projects, most recently in the last 4 years, one which was Institutional Memory Pearls of Wisdom project. In 2011, because of this strong partnership we had, we did a Hurricane Irene workforce willingness project with them, and then currently our project is also another partnership with them. A few more similarities, NYC DOH, which is the surrounding area. So why aren't we working with NYC DOH if Columbia's in Harlem? Columbia is in New York City. Great question. So New York City has a population of 8 million. Their Department of Health has about 450, I can't say words today. The coffee needs a little more time to hit. 4,500 full-time employees, and of that, 40 to 50 are kind of in that preparedness division. Within all of our health departments, within our systems, that is just even a public health department as compared to a hospital, as compared to a Department of Social Services, and again, we talked about the one layer of the municipality, the one organization has multiple different divisions and different fiefdoms that hang out. I'm a general surgery trainee, so I think everyone else sucks because, you know, like, they're medicine people or they're OB people. The same thing happens in departments of health, and unfortunately, very few people are allocated to work on preparedness work, especially, I say this in context of all the climate-induced natural disasters that happen with Ebola and all these other things, which are triaged eventually to preparedness. New York City has a budget of $1.68 billion to play with, which is nice. Again, about 8 miles or so away, you have Nassau County Department of Health, which has about 260 employees. 50% of, again, of this 1.35 million population of working adults works in New York City, but they come home to Nassau with this 260-person employee staff, of which 2 to 3 of them are in the Public Health Preparedness Division, and they're only dealing with a revenue of about $213 million. Nassau's workforce specifically has been noted to have some pretty substantial changes that are happening that are pretty consistent with the rest of the country. That's kind of why I showed you this this comparison, because Nassau really is Joe Health Department. And it's very similar to, I'm sure, everyone else's health department everywhere else. They're facing the same issues of aging workforce, issues with incentivized retirement, difficulty recruiting, retaining staff. And so all of this actually prompted a project, our project way back in 2011, about this institutional memory project. As one of the lovely things about training people is that it's lost if they leave or if, you know, the training changes. All these things influence the value of training. So in order to, and there's always the debate between didactic training and then experiential training. And I think a lot of the value from institutions like public health agencies is that experiential learning. That stuff that you have to get from the administrators and the managers and the people that have been there for years. You said average 13-year median, you know, time of working. That's value that you can't teach in a webinar and you can't teach in a one-day training course. So in order to preserve that institutional memory, we created this this project, which I'll show you in a bit. So in terms of paradigms kind of for best practices in public health, this is more along the lines of the community-defined evidence paradigm of how to what works well, what works poorly. That's only something known by people who are immersed within the local context. When we say that public health agencies are facing all these challenges, money being a huge thing on an organizational level, if there's no money to pay and recruit people to begin with, there's definitely no money to do research on the best practices within public health. So that's kind of why there's a push, especially at the level of the CDC, to adopt this whole community-defined evidence paradigm, whereby like the agencies have adopted some practices, they all endorse it, and that's what at least was demonstrated by our institutional memory project. So what this project was, so after doing this, we had established this partnership originally from 2003, but then in 2010, we decided to do this project to preserve the institutional memory. It's intended to represent tools and guidance for what can be used in non-emergent disaster settings, just normally. It's the pearls of wisdom of all the senior leadership staff at the health department who averaged more than 15 to 20 years of average time in the health department. But ideally, it would be able to be applied to a public health crisis or emergency. This was just kind of a goal at that time, but never had an opportunity to be applied. So just so I can orient you and explain better than I do.
Hello, Thank you.
One of my colleagues, Jonathan Suri, actually presented on this subject last year, spent countless hours, days, years trying to put this compilation together, and very thankfully the staff we work at, our partners at Nassau County, were so generous to give their time to make this video. All of the issues that my colleagues have mentioned in terms of organizational management are extremely challenging, and points for you. Fix it. That's all I'm saying. Fix it and make it all better. But the killer thing is that I can stand at my end of the spectrum, which is the healthcare delivery side, and I'm like, why isn't more done? And there's a lot of limitations based on just the organizational structure and management of how things are. The video that he's composed is fantastic. If anyone is interested in watching, it's freely available at ncdp.columbia.edu, and I can give you that information at the end of the talk. But again, because one of the goals was to kind of look at the value of these pearls in a disaster circumstance, I promise we did not have anything to do with making Sandy or Irene happen, but we just did. It was lucky for us, I guess. Bad for the area, but lucky for us. Because in 2011, right after this video was produced, and again, before this, in New York City, there was no other disaster, no other hurricane since the 1960, when Hurricane Donna hit New York City. So they were speaking and saying these pearls of wisdom based on, you know, what the routine day-to-day was. Then Irene happened, and then Sandy happened. Sandy and Nassau really devastated a lot of the Long Island infrastructure. Storm surge was extremely high. A lot of damage to 3,000 homes, which continued on into late 2013. 90% of the county lost power for up to 2 weeks or more. There was issues following the storm in the recovery phase with molds and a lot of environmental exposures. There was concern at the time because of water failure of the sewage treatment plants and the water quality, that there would be infectious disease and other outbreaks. Because of the loss of power, there's concern about carbon monoxide exposures and all of that surge obviously going to the hospitals. From a clinical standpoint as well, because all of this caused a great amount of infrastructural damage, it placed the burden on other portions of the health system that wouldn't necessarily be burdened. So, being that these kind of factors were there, that's why we decided to revisit these pearls of wisdom in our current project with the CDC. So using the same paradigm of semi-structured key informant interviews amongst senior leadership, we're looking at the same leadership because they love their jobs and they're still there. Or people who are retired, unfortunately, people in their equivalent positions, were asking questions about what their Sandy experience was, what their baseline health experience was at the agency, anything Sandy specific, and how all of this kind of changed in contrast to the qualitative interviews we had done before. Kind of qualitatively, when you watch the video, or if you do, hopefully you do, there are 10 different parables that come from this. And in a very similar way to the different organizational actions, where you have the knowing, doing, and acting, you have leadership management, which would be your doing, your relational, which is the acting of function of public health to relate to the community, and the knowing is the knowing. I wish we'd have talked before I would have changed this slide. Again, you teach me things. So we were trying to figure out which ones are applicable. Basically, at the end of the day, I don't have time anymore, but the most applicable ones were the relational aspects. Interestingly, in our study, we found that some of the leading aspects of things, which are paradigms that have been dictated for years and years, which are practicing ICS, aren't always implemented. In terms of the knowing, as you mentioned before, there aren't always opportunities for continuing education and things. So our conclusions are that essentially practice-based evidence is essential to building the research base in public health. We need to place attention on fostering transferable skills of public health professionals instead of constantly directing it where the money and funding is going towards one specific training intervention. Leadership does really matter, and organizational management is really what drives that leadership, and so that's everyone in this room. And we'll be exploring a lot of these other things further as our study goes on. Thank you.